is April 15th, tax day, 2016. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 560 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports and Earth. I am your aforementioned host, Will Leach, and I think you're spending part of your day with me. NBA playoffs start Saturday. I can't think of a person I want to talk to about it more than Lee Ellis. He is the former Australian fact checker for NBA TV's The Starters. Now he's just part of the crew over there. He is, if you don't watch The Starters on NBA TV, I don't even know who you are anymore. Anyway, Lee every year joins me to preview the NBA playoffs because he knows everything about the NBA and is my favorite guy to talk to about this. So here, I'm just going to get out of the way. It's Lee Ellis. Follow him on Twitter, by the way, L-E-I-G-H-E-L-L-I-S. And, of course, give us a nice review on iTunes, subscribe to us, all that sort of stuff. But mostly, enjoy Lee Ellis and the NBA playoffs right here. All right, Lee, first off, thank you for this becoming a little bit of a tradition to have you on previewing the playoffs, which is good because I, how's the show going? Has it been a fun year? This year seems like such kind of a crazy year in the NBA that every night must have been an adventure.
It has been. I mean, the regular season, I think, has been the best we've probably ever seen in the NBA because right up until last night, to the last game, to almost the last shot by Kobe, it was exciting and everyone's been watching it and talking about it. So it makes our job a lot more fun, I guess, when you know that everyone's tuned in because the Warriors have been chasing this Bulls record from 20 years ago, basically all season long. And I think what's made that even more special is the fact that the San Antonio Spurs until a week ago were pretty much right on their tails and could have still overtaken them for the number one spot if they'd won that game last week. And obviously then with the Kobe stuff, you know, when he announced that he was going to retire at the end of the season, that's just given us everything a little bit more to follow and a little bit more to watch. So we've all really, really enjoyed it. I mean, the thing about the Warriors just chasing that record, no one ever thought that was going to be beaten. And now they go out and beat it. And I mean, it's just been incredible. So for us to be able to do this for a job and for a career, it's really, really special. We all appreciate it so much, and we have so much fun with it. And it certainly helps when the product that you're talking about is just intriguing to so many people, not just here in America, but all around the world. That's the other thing we've noticed is, I mean, we get emails and tweets and questions from people from all over the place, and everyone's trying to get on their league pass and watch what's going on. And it's just so much fun, and we all really enjoy it.
Well, we are. You guys are one thing. One of the many things I love about you guys is that you guys are always so thankful to have the opportunity. But I have to say, just from an audience perspective, I'm very grateful that we have you guys. So thank you for keep doing that. So it's a good time to be. It's just generally a great time to be a basketball fan. So across the board. All right. So we're gonna go through. Series by series. You're going to have to predict each one all the way through. So I know you've already done this on the drop. I know you've already done this. I've not heard it on the drop yet. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to spoil the drop for myself, but everybody else should listen to the drop first. Listen to the starter's drop first and then come in and listen to this, which I'm assuming most people probably already have anyway.
I hope so.
So, all right. So here we go. We're going to start with the Eastern Conference because, you know, people could use a rest before we get into the nitty gritty. Starting with, of course, with Cleveland and Detroit. It's strange. It's very weird to think how kind of bizarre the Cleveland season has been, and how it says something about the Eastern Conference that Cleveland really has been at times full of tumult and full of chaos and firing the coach and then all the issues with Lou and injuries and so on. And yet still it felt like there was never really a doubt that they were going to cruise not only to the number one seed, but cruise through the playoffs. When you look at Cleveland, well, we can look a little bit at this matchup, but where are in the ongoing drama that is the Cavaliers? Where are they? Where's their mindset? Where's their heads at? Where's everybody humming as they go into the playoffs?
Well, I think we're going to find out because, as you mentioned, there's been a lot of chaos and a lot of turmoil within the team this year, and often that doesn't lead to good results on the floor. But the Cavs have been pretty much top of the East all season long. And I think, personally, LeBron just kind of got bored with about 6 or 8 weeks to go in the season, and he just kind of was like, let's just get to the playoffs. So now that they're there, I think we're going to see a different Cavs team, and I think we're going to see them sort of switch on and focus here. And LeBron, I think, has seen how much adulation that Steph Curry and the Warriors have got this year. And a lot of people, myself included, haven't really given the Cavs a real chance to be the champions this year. I don't think, from what we've seen on the two games they have played Golden State, that they're in that same level as them, because the Warriors just handled them pretty easily. But then again, the playoffs are different, and LeBron is he's a two-time champ, and he's been the last 5 years in a row, so he knows exactly what it takes to win in the playoffs. And last year he did it, remember, without Kevin Love. After that first game, Kevin Love had his shoulder dislocated, and they made it all the way to the finals. And then in the final, they lost Kyrie Irving in their first game. They still took two games off the Warriors, and they in fact led 2-1. So, there's no doubt that LeBron knows how to perform in the playoffs, and he knows when to turn it on. And we'll get a real sense of all that stuff that went on this year, all that sort of silly nonsense in the locker room, if any of that will carry over to the playoffs. And I don't think they're going to have any problems certainly in this first round, and they're probably not in the second round either. But as they go deeper into the playoffs, perhaps that does come back to haunt them a little. So, they play the Pistons in this first round, and I have the Cavs winning it in five. And the reason why I say five is because I like the way that Stan Van Gundy has kind of built this team. They're all his players. He's made a few trades, signed a few guys. And it does resemble similarly to that 2009 Orlando Magic team that he coached, and actually, in fact, upset LeBron and the Cavaliers in the conference finals and went on to the NBA finals to play the Lakers, and they lost that. But if you remember that team, it was Dwight Howard in the middle, and on the wings you had Rashard Lewis and J.J. Redick and Jameer Nelson. Well, this current Pistons team has Andre Drummond in the middle, just like Dwight Howard, and then you've got the guys like Reggie Jackson and like Marcus Morris and like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope as well, and Tobias Harris there. So I think he's trying to sort of remake that team a little bit, but I just don't think they're quite ready to make a real splash in the playoffs. I think this is going to be good experience for them, and I think they're going to play well, and I think they're going to perform. They're going to put up a fight against Cleveland, but I think at the end of it, what you often see, especially in the first round of the playoffs, is it's just a gap in talent, overall talent. And I think that that's going to come back to be too much for the Cavs. And, I think the Pistons are going to learn from this experience, and you might see that pay off in a couple of years. But this year, I just don't think they're quite ready to cause a big, big upset.
They clearly are going to miss Josh Smith. That was just the biggest mistake that Van Gundy made, and it totally set everything off track. So, all right, so I have to say, I'm just generally just fascinated to see what happens with Cleveland, the Cavaliers, and everybody's got their butt clenched in their hands, tightened when someone unfollows someone LeBron unfollows the team on Twitter, and everybody freaks out. So that's the day and age that we're kind of in. All right, the next matchup is interesting. I have to say, of the Eastern Conference first round matchups, this is the one I find the most kind of fascinating. It's Atlanta and Boston. Atlanta's the 4 seed, Boston the 5 seed. Boston kind of been up and down all over the place, but clearly making the great moves under Brad Stevens, and clearly building something up for the future. Atlanta, the team that was so exciting last year, but and clearly, they're a franchise that's back on the right track in a lot of ways. And I think we've seen, you've been to some Hawks games this year. I've been over the last couple of years. There's a different energy, even with this year not as exciting as last year and 3 years last year. There's just generally a different, better energy and vibe going on with the Hawks across the board. But it still feels like last year was magical, and this year is the year after magical in a lot of ways. How do you look at this series? Which direction are each of these franchises going? And I'm curious if which of them you think would give a better matchup to Cleveland in the second round.
Yeah, I mean, it has been an interesting season for the Hawks because they won 60 games last year, and that kind of shocked everybody, and nobody thought they were going to get close to that this year. And so they got 48 wins. It's still a pretty good season, but not quite as good as last year. This one's actually pretty tough. I think it's going to be a pretty, pretty close series. Brad Stevens, the coach of Boston, and Budenholzer for Atlanta, both have their teams well organized defensively. They share the ball on offense. They don't have that sort of one standout superstar. It's more a collective effort. And I think that the Atlanta Hawks having home court advantage is just going to give them the advantage. That's why you try to win as many games you can to get that sort of advantage when you don't have many others going into a series. Isaiah Thomas for Boston was an all-star this year. He's played very, very well. Marcus Smart's a good player, especially good defensively. His shot on offense is a little bit up and down. And a couple of those bigs in Sullinger and Kelly Olynyk for Boston are good players, but you also don't think they're the sort of centerpiece that you're going to build a team around and sort of and grow your franchise on. And I think if you look at Atlanta, Al Horford, he's a free agent at the end of this year. He's going to be in hot demand because everybody thinks he's a fantastic defender and he's got a very reliable offensive game. But also at this stage of his career, he's not the sort of centerpiece for a team. He's going to be a very important complementary player for whoever, wherever he plays next year. I mean, I hope he stays in Atlanta, but he's certainly going to have plenty of suitors out there looking for him. So I think this series, it's going to be a pretty tight one. I don't think you're going to see sort of any, you know, 15 or 20 point wins by any team, because they just are pretty they're both similar. They're disciplined. They share the ball, as I mentioned earlier, and they sort of know how to execute without having to sort of rely on someone going for 45 points or anything a night. And I think the bigs for Atlanta in Horford and Millsap do have a slight edge over those other guys, as I mentioned earlier, Olynyk and Solinger, because those guys just not quite as experienced. Amir Johnson's been good for Boston as well. He's another big for them, but I think that the skill level is just in Atlanta's favour here. So, you know, I think this is going to be a pretty fascinating series. But I said on the drop at our TV show tonight, I think it's going to go seven games. I think the home team's going to win every game, because I just feel that's how close these two teams are. And you could easily make a case for Boston. There's no doubt about that they could win this series. But for me, I just felt that Atlanta played them better throughout the season. It's just not one of Boston's best matchups. Atlanta won the series 3-1. And I think they're going to win a tight, close series in seven. And move on to the second round and face, of course, you know, as I expect, Cleveland in that second round. And for Atlanta, that will really be for them a chance to try to at least get a win. Last year, remember, the Cavs swept them in the conference finals, and Kyle Korver went down, and Atlanta sort of the wheels really fell off for them. And I think they really want another crack at Cleveland and think they can do better this time. So if my predictions come true, we will see them in the conference semifinals this year.
It does almost feel, though, like Boston, regardless of the talent level they have now, they do feel like a franchise ascendant. It does feel like what they're doing, if you're a fan of a team that doesn't have, that's not the Warriors or Cleveland, so on, it does feel like Boston is, they're on to something, and the future is very bright for them, kind of really no matter what happens in this series.
Yeah, the future is bright, but I also think that Danny Ainge feels that they still need that, you know, that one player who can really sort of turn things around and change things for them. You know, as I've mentioned, Isaiah Thomas was an all-star this year and a deserving one at that. But I don't think he's a number one guy. I think he's still a sort of 1A or a B guy. I think they still would like to have someone, you know, obviously everyone would love to have a Kevin Durant type of player. And I think that Danny Ainge probably feels that they can't really contend for a championship until they add that piece. He's got plenty of draft picks. He's got plenty of cap space this year. He's done a great job acquiring all those assets, but now he has the even more challenging part, which is actually turning those assets into something that turns the franchise around. Because, you know, a lot of their players, you look at it and you just think they're kind of all role players, but they're playing very, very well together and they are having success. I mean, they won 48 games this year. Brad Speed has done a great job. But you still think they're just one, at least one real piece away from being someone who you can throw into that mix as being a real title contender. You know, I just don't see them as that at the moment. And maybe they will continue to grow. And maybe, you know, after this season, wherever they finish in the playoffs here, you know, it'll be a good stepping stone for them. But I still feel that they're not quite in that level yet where you can put them in the mix that they are a genuine title contender.
All right, well, them with every team, I'm just going to pretend they add Kevin Durant in the offseason.
Yeah.
I just imagine
yeah.
what they did. That's the subplot to everyone. Like, imagine them with Durant. Yes, imagine they had a team with Durant. They'd be very good.
Yes,
they'd be
right.
very good.
Yeah.
All right, so now we look at Miami and Charlotte. Charlotte, you know, it's funny. I did a playoff rootability rankings on Sports North today or yesterday, and I actually had Charlotte relatively low, and I got a lot of flack for that. I didn't realize, is this a particularly likable Charlotte team? They're a team that I really don't know that well. And then when you look at Miami, I think it's probably a little bit too hopeful to expect Bosch to come back. But can Wade, how is Wade? He's got so many miles at this point. How much can you expect out of him in this series? I feel like this is like a sleeper tight series.
Yeah, this was probably one of those series I wanted to pick the upset and sort of go for Charlotte, because They've been very good. Remember last season they had a bad season after making the playoffs the year before, and you wondered if maybe Steve Clifford's sort of message and voice was starting to wear off in their players. But what they did really well, Charlotte, was they improved their three-point shooting a lot. They were fourth worst in the league last season, and they were fourth best this season. And so that shows they understood that they needed to improve where everybody else is seemingly improving, and that's shooting the three-pointer. So they got Nicholas Batum, they added Marvin Williams, and Kemba Walker really benefited from that, because with those guys knocking down three-pointers, it meant Kemba got a few more open looks, and so he shot the ball a lot better this year. So I like Charlotte, especially at home. I think they're a very, very good home team. They do struggle a little bit on the road, though, and that's where it sort of helps Miami. Miami has home court advantage. Although, having said that, Charlotte did beat Miami in Miami not too long ago, so they do know how to win down there. But Dwayne Wade is one of those guys who always performs in the playoffs. And you're right, he's got a lot of miles in his legs these days. And you saw a couple of years ago, you thought maybe Dwayne Wade's going to be one of those guys whose career ends a little bit early just because he played at such a high level for so long. And he went to the finals so many times there. He went 5 times with the Heat and won 3 championships, that maybe it would sort of catch up with him a little bit. But he's actually worked his body out really well this year, and he's had one of his best seasons, not from a statistical standpoint as such, when he was like when he led the league in scoring and like that, but for consistency and being out on the floor. And you saw just the other night when they're in Detroit, they had to get a big win, and Dwayne Wade and Jared Johnson really performed, and that's where the experience comes in for the playoffs. And Charlotte, even though they were there a couple of years ago, and they've got guys like Marvin Williams who have been there with Utah and Batum with Portland, I feel that they're just not quite ready to knock off a team that's experienced and deep, even without Chris Bosh there in Miami. And I think we can probably assume he won't be back, certainly not for this first round. And if Miami progresses, hopefully we do see Chris Bosh again, because that would be just such a boost for Miami to get into the playoffs. I mean, he'd probably come off the bench, and even if he was only playing 15 or 20 minutes a night, that would be really, really big for them. So I think it's going to be a fun series, though. I think you're going to see, a young team hungry to win and hungry to have success in Charlotte, and then you're going to have a team like Miami who feels like, you know what, if things go our way, we could, maybe cause an upset in that second round and really, really start to do some damage. So I like it. I'm fascinated to see how the Hornets perform, but I am going to go with the experience and the depth and the home court advantage and take Miami in 6. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Hornets push it to 7. And again, even if they do cause an upset, if they get hot from outside, Steve Clifford's teams always play defense. They're a very well-organized team defensively. But I just don't think they're also quite at that level yet. I think this is just one of those teams, Miami. They just know how to manage a series, especially, as I mentioned, when you got someone like Wade, who's been to the finals several times. And Eric Spoelstra, he's a very good coach too. He's an underrated coach, and he knows how to coach in the playoffs. So I'm going to sort of stick there with everything that I kind of know and expect to see from a Miami Heat team and take the Heat in 6.
All I ask is that if the game that the Hornets get eliminated, Michael Jordan not show up, because I can't take any more Crichton Jordan memes. I just can't. God. I can't do it. I can't take any more. I can't. I think that's. Nah. I just can't. I just can't.
Yeah. I've never crying memed Jordan, and I never will.
Yes, I'm
just
with
getting him out of hand.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, and there is a little part of me that is actually mortally offended when people though with the idea, you realize that some people probably only know him as the meme, and I'm like, well, okay, well, that is not the most horrible thing I've ever heard, actually.
I know. So, it's crazy. It's crazy.
At least the Harlem Shake was briefly amusing. All right. So we'll finish up the East with Toronto and Indiana. I, of course, am talking one of the members of the starters who is not from Canada. I'm curious, this feels like one of the quieter 56 win teams. I can remember this is the most wins the Raptors have ever had in franchise history. They've been very solid start to finish. No one in the division was ever even particularly close to them. Did they feast on kind of a weak division, particularly with those bottom three teams, to get this record? Are they built for the playoffs, or are they like a steady regular season team?
Well, I hope you're wrong about the last point. I hope they're not just a steady regular season team, because that's what they've been the last 2 years, and they've gotten to the playoffs with home court advantage and haven't been able to convert that into a series win. Last season against Washington was just an abysmal performance by Toronto. They blew game one, they got it to overtime and couldn't close it out, lost game two at home, and then the wheels fell off completely in Washington. And really, for Toronto to win 56 games, I mean, once you break that 50-win barrier, I think then, you know, especially if you have home court advantage, occasionally you don't, but especially if you have home court advantage, you should absolutely win that first round series. And they're going to take on a team in Indiana who, you know, they've got Paul George, one of the top 10 or 15 players in the league, you know, superstar when he wants to be, and a guy capable of carrying a team, you know, through a whole playoff series, especially one against Toronto, who, you know, because of what's happened in the last 2 years, they're probably going to be a bit nervous and there's probably going to be a bit of tension that first game. Toronto knowing just how important it is that they win that one. And if they don't win it, then all the fans in Toronto and all Raptors fans everywhere are going to start to feel the same sort of horror story that they've seen the last 2 years. So, you know, it's important for Toronto to make sure they take care of business and win that first one and game two as well, and don't go to Indiana behind, because I think if you fall behind against Indiana, they're the type of team, a little bit unpredictable. They've had good moments and bad moments this season, but if they get in front, then you know, it's just you just can't see Toronto sort of getting back in the series, and it's just going to be so tough, and they're going to sort of go through what they've done in the last 2 years, where all of a sudden, you know, a great season ends in nothing because they weren't able to convert that into a postseason victory. So, you know, having said that, I think this is a different team, because one of the big problems they had last year was Kyle Lowry was out of gas by the time the playoffs came, and you could tell he was getting no elevation in his shots. His energy didn't seem to be there, and the Raptors just couldn't score. This year, they've been a lot better with him. They've managed his minutes and his body a lot better. He's rested a couple of games. He's gotten himself in better shape as well. He came in, of course, remember, skinny Kyle Lowry at the start of the season. And DeMar DeRozan made the All-Star team as well again. So I feel that Toronto have learned from those last two painful years. But we'll only find out in the next couple of days and over the course of the next week in this series, because that's the true test of whether or not you've learned and whether you've improved. And, you know, DeMar DeRozan, I mentioned this also on the pod, he's third in the league this year in free throws attempted at per game at 8.5. Last year in those four games against Washington, he took 17 free throws only. That's only half his average of four a game. But the year before that against Brooklyn, in the three wins the Raptors had against the Nets, he took 13 per game. And I think that's so important for DeRozan. He's there, you know, him and Lowry get all their points. So they have to go out and get them early. And you do that by getting to the free throw line and just seeing the ball go through the hoop, getting up points. You know, even if you only make one or two, just see the ball go through and keep the scoreboard moving. Because once you fall behind, and if the offense stagnates a lot, then you run into problems. Then you start panicking. Then you start taking bad shots. And that's what an inexperienced team does in the playoffs. And that's what the Raptors did. If they've now learned, Dwayne Casey, we're just running so many plays, telling DeRozan to get inside, get free throws, and maybe even getting Paul George in foul trouble as well. Because I think if you take Paul George out of his pace of team, I think the Raptors sweep them. So, you know, it's a fascinating series. Obviously, everyone who's got a Toronto tie is very excited and very much looking forward to, you know, getting rid of those, getting rid of the demons,
the
you know,
the monkey
I can't
off
think
the
of the
back.
Word.
The monkey off the back.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, and advancing, you know, winning just their second playoff series in franchise history. So, I think they are going to do it this year, and I think Indiana probably is a good matchup for them, just because the paces have been a little bit inconsistent. But having said that, it is the Raptors, so I think the paces win a couple of games. But I'm saying that the Raptors win it in six, and they finally get out of the first round.
All right, well then let's take us through the rest of the East. You've got Cleveland, Atlanta, and you mentioned before you've got Cleveland. You've got Miami, Toronto. Who do you like in that one?
Miami, Toronto, again, this is another one of those series where the experience of Wade and Joe Johnson, as I mentioned earlier, is going to be very, very tough for the Raptors to compete with. If Chris Bosh was playing, I would probably almost certainly take the Heat. But I think this is a different Raptors team. I think Valanciunas has also shown that he's improved and understands a little bit more how to use his body. And I think he's going to be a factor. Although, having said that, Hassan Whiteside's obviously been fantastic for the Heat this year defensively, blocking shots and rebounding, and then on offense. I mean, they just need to throw the ball anywhere near him, and he can alley-oop that in. He's like DeAndre Jordan for the Clippers. So he's been great. So, but again, the Raptors will have home court advantage, and I'm gonna say that the Raptors get out of that one as well. But it'll probably go six or seven games as well. So I might be drinking the Kool-Aid a bit here with the Raptors Kool-Aid, but I'll say the Raptors make it all the way to the conference finals there. And then Cleveland, Atlanta. I think I think Atlanta has also, even though they lost 12 games more than they won last year, I think they are a better team. And I think with Al Horford and Paul Millsap understanding just how important it is for them to perform for Atlanta, I think they win a couple of games off Cleveland at least. But I think the Cavs, again, are just too deep and a little bit too strong. And I think that LeBron, as I mentioned earlier, he wants to show people that he's still, you know, the sort of top two or three players in the league, and he can turn it on whenever he wants. So I think the Cavs win that, but I think that one goes to six games.
Okay, and then we have said all year that Cleveland almost has, I wouldn't say a bye, but we'll say a bye to the NBA Finals, but we'll say they're the ones that get relegated up from the Championship League to the Premier League to the Finals. We'll put it that way. What's their weak points? Is there an East team? Is Toronto that team? Is potentially Miami that team? If you'd gone the other way, is there a team that can beat them, or is there just not anyone in their league in the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, the whole thing always comes back to me. Like, can you beat the Cavs once? Yes, probably. But can you beat them four times out of seven games? And again, LeBron, he's just too good. And we saw that last year that, you know, it doesn't really matter the circumstances. LeBron's going to, if he has to, put up 40 and 12 and 10 and sort of carry that team and play 45 minutes and do everything. And the Raptors, I think that if the Raptors can find the confidence, especially if they've won two series by then, Kyle Lowry will definitely be up for that series. I mean, it'd be great to see him and Kyrie Irving battle it out. But I'm going to give it to the Cavs because they will have home court advantage. And they'll just have LeBron, you know, super motivated LeBron, knowing that this is another chance to get back to the finals for his sixth straight year, because he really wants a shot at Steph Curry. I mean, he wants a shot at the Warriors, and he wants to prove that, you know, he is still the best player in the world, and maybe he is. I mean, I think most of us feel that Steph Curry has overtaken him now as far as all-out impact on a game. But LeBron is still a beast at both ends of the floor. He can still do it. The last 10 games that he's played, he's been shooting the ball incredibly well. So almost like he was cruising sort of around the All-Star break and, you know, probably just after Christmas. And he decided about a month or so ago, right now it's time to get into playoff mode and playoff gear. And he's been trying to sort of send a little message, I think. So, you know, I would like to believe that the Raptors can go all the way. But I think I first off want to see them win one playoff series. And then if they can win two, that'd be a pretty strong achievement. I'm not sure they've got three in them, though. So if it comes down to Raptors, Cavs, I would probably take the Cavs. But I think the Raptors can take at least two games off them. So I'll say Cavs in six for that one.
All right. All right. So there's the Eastern Conference, and that's all that really matters. So we're done. Thank you for coming on with me, Lee. No, we got to go to the Western Conference, obviously. let's just start with Golden State. It's weird. I feel like any deep conversation on Golden State should come, I guess, when we look into later rounds. This Houston team, is this, like, are they going to have to, like, if they, looks like they're going to, like, Howard is not going to be back around next year. When they lose this series, what does Houston do next? It felt like Morey had built something smart and the idea, like, we just need a couple of stars and it'll all work out. He got the stars and then it didn't quite work out. Was it, I know Harden's been carrying them for a while and they look thin around them, but where does Houston go after this, whether they go out in four or five or however many games?
I think the Warriors are just going to blow them away in four games, because you mentioned it, like, Dwight Howard's not going to be there next year. And the thing with the Rockets, let's say, in a perfect scenario for them, they do somehow win that first game in Golden State. You know, maybe the Warriors are a little emotionally hungover from the season and maybe they're a little complacent in that first game. I mean, these are things that you don't expect, but you just never know what could happen. Then obviously the Rockets could be some sort of chance. But the problem with Houston is, you know, they don't like each other. I don't think those players like each other. And it's very hard to succeed if you just don't like each other, especially when they're your main two players. And, you know, Dwight won't be there next year. So they're not really playing to sort of build something. They're more sort of just trying to extend this as long as possible, knowing that the chances of them going anywhere in the playoffs is extremely remote. And, you know, they probably won't have the same coach next year. JB Bickerstaff's done a reasonable job since Kevin McHale took over to at least get them into the playoffs. But I just think there's so many internal problems with that team. I can't really see them getting it together and beating perhaps the best team we've ever seen in the history of the NBA. So, yeah, it's a monumental task for Houston, but I just don't think they're up to it. They haven't been fun to watch all year. and they simply aren't deep enough anyway. I mean, James Harden would need to score 50 a game, which, you know, I mean, he's maybe capable of doing that, but they don't have the parts, they don't have the chemistry, they don't have the pieces, and they just don't have a future together. So it's almost like, what are you even playing for anyway? And, you know, when you're coming up against the Warriors, who are super motivated, just coming off the greatest season, regular season we've ever seen, Steph Curry, you know, he's going to be the MVP again, there's no doubt about it. They need to cap it off now with a championship victory, and they want to get past the Rockets as quickly as possible so everyone's fresh and ready for that second round. So I think the Warriors sweep them, and I don't think this series is even really close.
Wow, what a stirring playoff slogan. What are we even playing for anyway? Get fired up.
That should
up.
Be on their T-shirt.
Yeah, get yeah. fired up. Yeah, that's like keep repping. Always repping. Okay, so that brings us to the Clippers and the Trailblazers, the 4-5 game. It's funny, we talk about, you know, it's such a crazy Western Conference, the idea that, you know, you have Golden State, obviously this record holds, San Antonio, who is right with them all year, Oklahoma City, which has two potential Hall of Famers in their prime, and the Clippers, who have Chris Paul and Blake Griffin and all of that. It feels like there's a clear top four here. Portland has become this fun insurgent, and Lillard's been real likable and kind of broken through. I'm curious, is there a matchup in the West that leads itself to a upset in the first round? And if so, is it this one?
Yeah, I guess it probably would be this one because Damian Lillard has been kind of written off all season long, and the Blazers. I mean, no one really thought the Blazers were going to make the playoffs, let alone, you know, finish where they did in the fifth spot. And, you know, Lillard getting that all-star snub, I think all that did was add fuel to his fire, and he might even miss out on All-NBA as well. And he's the sort of guy who in the past, you know, he really remembers those sort of snubs and uses them to try to show everybody that he belongs. I like the Blazers. I think they've done a great job. CJ McCollum's been fantastic for them. But I just don't think they're quite deep enough to be able to really push the Clippers to a sort of seventh game. And then, you know, I mean, if ever it comes down to the seventh game, then it's just one game and you just don't know what could happen. But I think the problem for the Blazers is they just can't quite extend it that far. Chris Paul, I mean, he's an MVP sort of candidate as well. He won't win it, but there's a lot of people who feel he's had one of his best seasons, especially when Blake Griffin went down. You know, Chris Paul carried that team and they performed really well. And JJ Redick, I mean, he's great for Chris Paul because he's a shooter and that's what he needs in the backcourt with him. And talking of Blake Griffin, I mean, he owes his team big time because of what happened this year. I mean, you know, the leg injury, sure, those sorts of things happen, but then to, you know, punch your own medical or a training guy and break your hand and be out for even longer and then get suspended. I mean, that's a horrible look for the team. You know, he's one of the most important players. He was a third in MVP voting a couple of years ago, and then he's going doing something silly like that. So he definitely owes his team, and I think you're going to want to see him perform at a high level. He's obviously been rusty since he came back. That's to be expected. But I think he's going to try to sort of stamp his name on this series and try to take over as much as possible and sort of show his team, like, sorry for missing out on most of the season, guys, but I'll repay you now. So, you know, having said that, I'm sort of cheering for the Blazers just to extend it at least to six games, because I'd love to see Lillard, you know, have one of those performances where he puts up 35 or 40 a couple of games and really challenges the Clippers. But statistically, the Clippers have actually had his measure pretty well this season. He's only shot 18 points a game on 32% shooting, down, you know, a lot from what his actual season average is. So I think the Clippers realise that they basically just need to contain CJ and Damian Lillard as much as possible and make other guys like Alan Crabb, who's been okay, and Al-Farouq Aminu is another one, you know, he's performed well. But if those guys are the ones who are going to carry the Blazers to a series win, I you know, obviously it's very tough to see Portland coming out on top of that one. So I'm going to go that the Blazers win a couple of games, but the Clippers come out on top and win it in six.
All right, so that brings us to the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Dallas Mavericks. Oklahoma City, it's strange to think that, again, as I said before, it's just bizarre to think that a team with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook is sort of forgotten, or at least kind of the third tier team here. And Dallas, you know, it's Dirk, and can Dirk get them a game in this series or a couple? Is there any path for Dallas here?
Well, I think the best way for Dallas to try to get a game is to slow it down as much as possible, because you mentioned, I mean, Durant and Westbrook, they've probably got the biggest combined chip on their shoulder going into this, because, again, everyone's kind of ignored them this year. You know, if it's not the Warriors, it's the Spurs and then the Cavs, and everyone's like, oh, well, the Thunder are no chance. But obviously, you know, when you've got Westbrook and Durant, you're a chance against anyone at any time. And they've been to the finals. They've had playoff success. They haven't obviously won the championship, but they've both been there. And we know that, you know, Westbrook was, I think, third last year in MVP voting, and Durant won it the year before. And Westbrook will probably finish higher in MVP voting this year than Durant. So, yeah, they've got absolute superstars in their team. But they do have a slight vulnerability, and that's in the fourth quarter. We saw this year they performed pretty badly for a while there. And for Dallas and Rick Carlisle's a genius. He'll find a way to try to just muddy this game up a little bit and then try to take the pace out of it, so that if it gets to the fourth quarter, then you've got someone like Dirk, who you know can perform, and that's their best chance to steal the game, because they certainly can't keep the pace up with Oklahoma City. They'll get run off the floor and they'll get destroyed. They need to keep the game tight, and they need to keep it, just ugly, really, and try to upset Westbrook and Durant. And especially Westbrook, you know you can get into his head a little bit. So they'll try to find a way to do that and then give the ball to Dirk and hope Dirk can weave his magic and win a game. But I'm saying the Thunder are going to win it, but I think it does go six, because I just think that Rick Carlisle has shown in the past he finds a way. He's an excellent playoff coach. Remember a couple of years ago when the Spurs won the championship in that first round, Dallas actually took them to seven games. They led that series 2-1. And, you know, I mean, that would have been a huge upset if the Mavs had come out on top. And, you know, unfortunately for them, they didn't. They didn't have home court advantage. But it just showed again that, you know, Dirk's obviously a couple of years older, but Rick Carlisle finds ways to try to get his team, you know, keep his team relevant and keep the team in it. So I think that I think the Mavs can do that and just cause a little bit of unrest there in Oklahoma City. But I think the Thunder, just with their pace and their two superstars who are basically in their prime. And remember, Kevin Durant's a free agent at the end of this season. The one sure way to keep him in Oklahoma City is if he wins a championship, in my opinion. And he's going to want to show that, he's capable of doing that.
All right, and then the last series. Say, the real question with this, the San Antonio Memphis series, is will there be a game where Popovich actually just rests all of his starters for the second round? And I mean no offense to Memphis in that, but they have just been ravaged by injuries. I think they lost what 10 of their last 11. They fell apart. Didn't they lose a game to Houston by like 50 or something? Like they've really fallen apart.
Well, they lost. Yeah, I give full credit to Dave Yeager for keeping that team in the playoffs, because I thought they were going to drop out completely. He's done an incredible job just keeping his players together and keeping them fighting when they just are severely shorthanded guys that no one's ever heard of coming out of the D League, you know, and signing them up and playing them, and they kind of get production out of them. So he's done well, but yeah, the Spurs are just a perfect playoff machine. You know, they're deep, they're strong, they're talented, they're well coached, they're disciplined, they're organized. They've got home court advantage. They've got Kawhi Leonard, who's probably going to be runner-up MVP this year. They've got LaMarcus Aldridge. They simply don't have a weakness that Memphis can even try to sort of take advantage of. I mean, Zach Randolph, who's been a fantastic player, he's a little bit older now. He actually is the one team he really struggles against is San Antonio in the playoffs. So even their best player really doesn't have a great record against Spurs. So, yeah, this is the one series that I don't think there's anything you can really learn out of this series for San Antonio. I think they sweep them. I think they do it comfortably. And, credit to Memphis. They've done really, really well. Full respect to them. But they haven't got the load to be able to keep up with San Antonio. I think it's a comfortable sweep for the Spurs.
It's crazy to think that this Memphis team is in the playoffs, but last year's Oklahoma City team wasn't. It's kind of wild to even kind of imagine. So let's go to the next round then. Golden State Clippers. Is there a shot for the Clippers? Do they have a puncher's chance here? They're obviously motivated, but how do they match up with the Warriors? Do they have any sort of shot?
I definitely think they take a game off the Warriors. I don't think they can take the series, and I don't think they can take more than one game. And I think that game is probably game four, maybe after a bit of a bruising series. You know, the Clippers try to upset the Warriors somehow. But we've seen that, the Clippers simply aren't in the same class right now as the Warriors. You know, they've led them earlier in this year when they've played well, and they certainly get motivated and fired up for those games. But as we often see with the Warriors against pretty much anyone, there's a patch of the game of like a 4 to 6 minute period where the Warriors seem to rattle off like 20 to 25 points and just take full control of the game. And every other team looks around at their offense and it becomes so difficult to score. And the Warriors, I mean, they got knocked out by the Clippers a couple of years ago in 7 games when Andrew Bogut wasn't there. And I feel that the Warriors felt that, like, you know, they should have won that series. So, you know, there's a lot of hate between these two teams. There's a great rivalry. Any time sort of LA and that San Francisco, Oakland area battle, you know, there's always plenty of rivalry that goes into that and plenty of passion. But, I think if you just look at the Warriors, you know, assuming everyone's fully healthy, they're just too deep and they're too fast. And of course, you know, I mean, Steph Curry's just, he seems to play his best basketball against Chris Paul, who's one of the best defenders in the point guard position. And he's a great player. Chris Paul's a Hall of Fame player. There's no doubt about it. But he can't have the same power and the same control that he does over other point guards when Steph Curry can just light him up from anywhere. So, I'll say it's a gentleman's sweep for the Warriors in that one. I think they take it in 5 games and the Clippers kind of steal maybe game 3 or 4.
Yeah, that Curry, he causes some trouble for people.
Oh, yeah.
It's really not yet. There will be all sorts of decades where we'll be discussing what exactly he's doing and how insane that it is. All right.
Okay. You know, I was at a, I'll just tell you a quick story.
Of course,
Warriors game here in Atlanta earlier this year. And there was a little kid out on the court just shooting by himself. He was probably no older than, 9 or 10 years old. And he was shooting from a foot behind the three-point line, the NBA three-point line, and making shots. It turns out it was Coach Budenholzer's son. I think his name is John. And so that's how we got on there. Because first I was like, how is this kid shooting three-pointers?
He's playing, he's playing for Memphis. I think he'll actually be playing for Memphis.
Yeah. But when I found out, I was like, okay, that's the coach's son. So that's how he gets on there. But I was like, this is what kids are doing now. This is what they're doing. Yeah. They see Steph Curry pulling up from 5 feet behind the three-point line, and they're starting to work on that shot already. I mean, obviously, as a coach of kids, you wouldn't want them to do that. But when they don't have anyone there to tell them not to, kids are going, I want to be the next Steph Curry. And you're right, in 15 or 20 years' time, I think you're going to see the first sort of one or two guys come through who just pull up from inside halfway and shoot comfortably three-pointers. And it's crazy to think, Steph made 400 threes this year, and that was obviously a record. No one had even gotten 300, and he cracks 400. But in 20 years' time, I mean, guys might be hitting 500 or 600 regularly throughout the season. So, it's crazy to think that could be where the league is going.
That's crazy. He's going to go, his influence is going to go through the NBA the way that actually the name Shaq came in like 20 years later. Like one of my favorite things was like realizing that like, oh, all of the college freshmen are named Shaq. Because I'm now old enough that like Shaq, everyone named their kid Shaq, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
That is what, where Curry's going to be like, that sort of influence. Except bigger, of course. But all right, so Oklahoma City, San Antonio is the next round matchup. I want this to be closer than I think it might actually be, or is this a 7-game series?
This is a really tough one to think about right now because you just don't know what's going to happen in that first round. I mean, maybe the Thunder just blow the Mavs out of the water, and I mean, the Spurs, there's no way the Spurs are losing. So they could both go in there with sweeps, or the Mavs, take a couple of games off, and the Thunder go in, not quite as good as we thought. But what we saw during the regular season, when they were both full healthy, playing both their full teams, the Spurs were really good. Apart from that opening night game where Kevin Durant sort of turned it on late, hit a big three-pointer late and showed that, he's a superstar in this league. But I would take the Spurs in that one just because Kawhi Leonard has an ability to sort of get into Kevin Durant's face. But I just think that what we saw, it's 4 years ago now when the Thunder upset the San Antonio Spurs after losing the first 2 games, come back and won the next 4. I think the Thunder are a bit closer to that team now because this will be the first year they're in the playoffs and everyone's healthy. Durant wasn't there last year when they obviously didn't make it, and Westbrook the year before that, and Serge Ibaka as well. So they've always had one of their main guys injured in the playoffs, and that's what's derailed their playoff performance. And if they are healthy, that series should be an explosive one. It should go 7 games. And you know, you would love to see Kevin Durant and Westbrook sort of return to where they were 4 years ago, and you know, get back to, at least to the conference finals. But San Antonio have shown that they've just gotten better and better each year as well. You know, adding LaMarcus Aldridge, and Popovich has still got the same hunger and motivation as always, and he's always up to tricks. You know, he's always throwing in a different look. And you know, guys like Boris Dior, who you look at and think, God, this guy doesn't look that athletic, but he's incredibly athletic, even though he's a little bit heavier than sort of most NBA players look. And just his basketball IQ. I mean, he's easily one of the smartest players in the league, and he knows how to shoot. He knows when to shoot. He knows how to set up guys. And Boris Dior is one of those smart guys. If ever there's a mismatch and a smaller guy gets matched up on him, he takes him straight into the post and puts a move on him. And most often than not, he scores as well. He's one of the players I respect so much because he just understands how to be important and how to keep himself relevant in the league. So that one, four, man, I guess I'll take the Spurs, but that one I think is going seven. I hope it's going seven anyway. I think everyone would love to see seven games of the Spurs and the Thunder. But I'll say the Spurs win it just because they have home court advantage.
Well, one might argue that Boris Diaw is known for very solid plays. There's my little, there's my Lee Ellis shout out from the
Spurs.
Yeah,
very good.
Thank you, thank you. I was going to let this whole podcast go without getting one very solid play in there. So,
good stuff.
If we get our Golden State San Antonio Western Conference Finals, is there a way, like, whoever they face in the finals, it's weird to think that like LeBron, it would be like the consolation prize or the secondary.
Yeah,
because it does feel like the winner of that series that almost feels like would feel like a title de facto already, even though they still have LeBron to play. Because those not only are two of the best teams, they frankly, you know, in another era, it feels like we're talking about San Antonio as, and in almost any other season, we'd be talking about San Antonio as one of the best NBA teams of all time.
Yeah, I mean, they did win 67 games, and either them or the Warriors, who won 73, of course, one of them is going to not win the championship. And, you know, you look at that home record as well, the Spurs went 40-1, and the Warriors went 39-2. And so one of them's going to be like a season that's so good, it's going to end up with nothing. I think based on what we saw as the season progressed, I think the Warriors would win the series against San Antonio. I mean, how many games? I obviously wouldn't think it would be a sweep. I think it would probably go, you know, pretty deep there. But the problem really for San Antonio, I think we saw last Saturday night, was they tried to sort of slow the game down in that first half, and it was very tough to get a few baskets. But once the Warriors sort of shook them loose and did start hitting a few threes and got that lead out to 10 points, the only one area of concern for San Antonio, and it's really only against Golden State, is whether or not they can score enough points. And, you know, when they won that game, I think it was 87-79, which worked out well for them, and Steph went 1-for-12 from three-point range. This is a few weeks ago now. That was fine. Things went well for them, even though the Warriors were missing Iguodala and Bogut. But if everyone's healthy for the Warriors, and you know, once Steph gets going and Klay Thompson and Harrison Barnes, I mean, he's Harrison Barnes are going to get paid huge money this offseason. They just seem to have too many offensive weapons for the well-organized Spurs to counter. And I think that that's the biggest problem for San Antonio, is whether or not they can keep the game at their pace for long enough that they can keep it close to the end. And as we know in the NBA and in the playoffs and even in the regular season, if it's within a basket or two with a minute or two to go, it really can go either way. But it's just getting to that point. That's the biggest challenge for San Antonio against the Warriors. So I think the Warriors win that series, and I think I think it goes six games, but I definitely feel that it could go five. It definitely could go five, but then again, the Spurs are not the sort of team. You know, if I've learned one thing about following the NBA, it's basically never write Greg Popovich and the Spurs off, because we've seen them. I mean, remember, I think it was 2010 when Memphis finished eighth and upset the Spurs in the first round, which was an enormous upset at the time. And then a couple of years later, as I mentioned earlier, when the Thunder were down 2-0, and then they came back and won four games, and you thought, okay, this is finally the end of Ginobili and Parker and Duncan.
Right.
But again, they've come back and they've been in the championship twice, and they've won another championship. So that just shows that Popovich is, you know, he keeps his team competitive incredibly well, better than any other sports franchise certainly in basketball anyway. I couldn't speak of other sports, but you know, I know like the Detroit Red Wings were in the playoffs forever in the NHL. I don't know if they still are, but in the basketball world, the Spurs set the standard for every single year. You know, never tanking. Well, I guess they did tank once, and they got Tim Duncan out of the draft, so it worked out pretty well for them. but as far as that, Tim Duncan, at his age, still competitive, still relevant to this team because they've moved him out as being the main component on offense, and they just, you know, shuffled in new guys and still find a way to keep Tim Duncan, you know, an important player. He was almost an all-star again this year, which is incredible. So, you know, the Spurs, you keep thinking that at some point this is going to end with the big three, but maybe it won't. You know, maybe they'll still be competitive in a couple of years' time. But for this year, if they were to face Golden State in the conference finals, I'd say the Warriors in six.
All right, so that brings us to the finals. It would be a rematch, of course, of last year's finals. And it's funny because the Warriors won the last three games of that series and then have had this incredible season this year. It's almost kind of been forgotten that after three games of that series last year, everyone, the general consensus was like, holy crap, is LeBron going to pull off the biggest miracle in the history? Like, after that game three, you're like, wow, can he just do this? Can he just will this team to that? And frankly, the Cavs almost by definition, they'd have to be better than what they had in those finals last year. Do they have a puncher's chance at Golden State if he has more weapons? I know Golden State's, of course, is better than they were during the finals last year. But can the thing that he was kind of doing during that series, even if they even plays a little five almost against the Warriors, is there a way to slow it down enough and kind of grind his way through like he did to a couple wins last year? Can he do that again, or is there a different way to attack them?
Well, you would think with Love and Kyrie Irving, you would think there are certainly a puncher's chance. But what sort of gets overlooked last year in the finals, especially in Game 3, because I was there for that one in Cleveland, was that the Warriors stormed right back. And they were down 20, and they nearly actually won that game. Now, the Cavs deserved to, and LeBron was brilliant. But that last quarter, you could really see that Steve Kerr figured out something. It was like, okay, we just need to get Steph some more shots here. LeBron can't do everything. And that's really what happened. And then the Warriors closed it out from there pretty comfortably in the end because they realized that the toll was taking a hit on LeBron offensively and defensively. They had to find a way to sort of run him around. So Steve Kerr definitely figured things out. And now that he's got that win over Cleveland and you know, what we saw this year, the Christmas Day game is quite close. But then when they had the rematch, I mean, the Warriors just blew them off the floor. So you know, for Cleveland, they have to find a way to get Kyrie Irving to perform, you know, incredibly well, and obviously Kevin Love as well. And when that offense does hum for Cleveland, they can score pretty quickly, which is good for them, and that's what's going to be important. But whether or not they can sort of maintain it with Golden State for too long is the big question. So, you know, LeBron's still brilliant, and, you know, he is still that sort of guy who can go for 45 and just almost take every single offensive possession and try to score with it or find a guy to shoot. But you know, when you're relying on guys like J.R. Smith and Shumpert, I've just seen so much of those sort of guys where it's like J.R. might hit eight threes, but he could go 0 for 15 one night as well, and he'll just keep shooting. And, I mean, I guess that's kind of his role, that they just need him to shoot. But he's one of those guys who's so frustrating because you just can't see any consistency in his game after all these years. And, you know, he's a beautiful shooter. When he's got great mechanics. He can do all that, but JR just he's lazy on defense, and if he's not shooting, he really is almost redundant completely on offense. He doesn't sort of change up his game. It's either the shots are either going in or they're not, and if they're not, he doesn't try to find another way to score. And that's what's difficult for LeBron, because he has to find different ways to score, but some of these other guys they just can't do it. You know, Kevin Love, he can obviously hit the long shot when he gets going, and he can take guys a little bit in the post, but he's one of those big guys who I think prefers to sort of settle for jump shots rather than sort of get inside and get under the basket. But I would say if we do have a rematch of last year, I think the Warriors win it pretty comfortably in five games, actually. I think the Cavs defensively are just not good enough. and on offense, I mean, maybe they can run a little bit with the Warriors, but I'm not sure they can maintain that for a full, you know, five or six games to sort of trouble Golden State. I think they can maybe score with them, but I don't think they can outscore them, you know, certainly for long enough periods to cause what would be an upset.
All right, last question. If that happens, and that's how this goes down, and Golden State sweeps their way through, are they better than that Bulls team, in your opinion?
I mean, I think you would have to say yes, I think, because, I mean, the way the game is played now is totally different to the way it was played with Chicago. And, you know, I've been actually looking at a lot more Michael Jordan stuff on YouTube lately, just to sort of look at him again and try to form an educated opinion on a comparison. And I mean, Scottie Pippen, a brilliant, brilliant defensive player with his length and his ability and, you know, his speed. And Jordan's ability to fight for every single possession and just be able to control a game the way that he could. But my own thoughts are that the Bulls didn't have the depth that Golden State has right now. I mean, Rodman, obviously fantastic defender. He would cause Draymond Green a lot of problems. That would be a great battle to see. Draymond and Dennis Rodman and Draymond battling would be fantastic. Bogut and Longley, the two Aussies going at each other, that would be pretty fun. And Steve Kerr himself, I mean, coming off the bench, he was more than just a sort of stand and role play. He was good, but I mean, I sort of always feel silly always picking, or any time you pick against Michael Jordan, because he went to the final six times and won it six times. That is just unbelievable to think of that. And you know, as much as we love Steph Curry and what he's done, he's only been there once. You know, so if you were to compare him to Jordan, I think you'd need to see, you know, two or three championships in a row, and then you can really start making an even better comparison. But yeah, we would love to see it. I think Skeets actually said it the other day really well. Like, if it was played in today's format, I think the Warriors win. But if it was played the way the game was played in 95, 96, it probably favours the Bulls there. You know, the rules are slightly different. But, you know, Michael Jordan, I mean, he's, for us basketball fans, and for a lot of even people who aren't basketball fans, they just know that he was, you know, he changed the game and the league. You know, if it wasn't for guys like Jordan, maybe the game wouldn't be as popular as it is right now. So I know it's kind of, I'm sort of rambling a little bit here, but I just never want to disrespect what Michael did for the game and for our league. But what Steph is doing now, I think, is on a par as far as impact it's having worldwide around the game. And Steph is just amazing how, you know, he needed eight threes to break the record last night. He had six in about the first 5 minutes. I mean, he's doing something. Kenny Smith from TNT also said a really, really good comparison. He said, Steph Curry is Jordan without the dunks. And I think that's a great way of describing it, because he doesn't have that same power game where he can go inside and dunk all over guys, but he can kill you from the outside, you know, because he doesn't need any time to get his shot off. His handles are so incredibly good that he can shake off any defender. And he's got unlimited range. I mean, once he gets over half court, he's within range. And, you know, Michael Jordan wasn't a great three-point shooter. So... you know, different players, different games, but it would be so good if we could somehow watch a series between those Bulls and these Warriors.
Well, listen, when we all pass away and go to that great court in the sky, we will be able to finally. And I assume that is probably somewhat what the what the Christian idea of heaven is like. You get to watch the Warriors, and I get to see Nirvana play. I miss them too.
That's the sort of thing. Like, you sort of, everyone has their own sort of beliefs or whatever it is, but that would be unreal if we were all out there watching it. You know, seven games. Everyone has courtside seats as well. You know,
that sounds good. Yeah, okay. Well, we'll make that happen. Listen, I'm going to go ahead and just assume that's what heaven is like. That sounds good to me. All right,
okay.
Lee. Thank you as always. Of course, everyone, please watch the starters and then of course subscribe to the podcast. You guys are doing the Lord's work, and I'm honored to get to know any of you. So I'm honored that you let me do you come on and do this with me every year. So thanks, man.
No, it's my pleasure. Honestly, I enjoy talking, you know, basketball with anyone anytime. So it's certainly a lot of fun for me.
Yeah, even me. So, all right, everyone, follow Lee on Twitter at Lee Ellis, LeeGhellis. Lee, thanks again, and everyone else, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Music's by the Sundogs. We'll be back next week with all sorts of stuff, but mostly enjoy the games this weekend. Have a wonderful time, Lee. Thank you again. Have a great time this weekend. I hope that you do not move from the couch for about 48 hours.